There goes the neighborhood.
We got David Lefkowitz here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Well, Shiathambagora, and there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everyone. Welcome and welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Here on the internet on davesgoneby.com and with me, Dave Lefkowitz, as I have been doing for the past 7+ years and proud to be doing this show. This is our 325th episode. We're calling it We Love Lucy, for reasons I shall explain quite shortly. But this is going to be kind of a watershed, interesting little experiment of a show. You might know, if you've been following the continuing saga of this program, that I was on the radio back in Long Island, New York, for many, many years on a small station out there. And then my wife and I picked up and moved to northern Colorado over the summer so that she could teach at the university here and we could kind of make a new life away from the hassle and misery of New York, and also some of the wonderful things of New York, too. I mean, it's taken a bit of getting used to being far away from that, but it's been good, and I thank everybody for their good wishes about our move out here. But anyway, I decided to keep the program going as a podcast, as an audio stream, because I still love doing it. And so it's been interesting. I've been tinkering with the sound quality, which just never could really be as good as it was when I was on a real, actual radio station with microphones and a board and mixers, although we never actually did any mixing. So here, although I have some digital equipment, sometimes the volume would be low, or sometimes parts of the show would be low and digital, and other parts would be more analog, or you hear something and it would be a certain audio level, and then the commercial will come blasting out at you, kind of the way it does on regular television, just because there is no real way to regulate back and forth between some things that were recorded one way and things that were recorded another. But, you know, you've all been really cool about dealing with that, too, and some of that might continue. But I've been tinkering around and looking for ways to make the audio quality a little better and more consistent. Now, what I'm dealing with is a digital audio recorder, which should give really pretty decent sound quality with very little loss until I start transferring it through an MP3 thingy. Thingy being the technical operative term there. And then also I'm bringing things into a program called Audacity, which is a free shareware program that involves audio editing, and you can pull things in and out, except these things are never easy with me. I'm not a techie. I've always been a geek, but I'm not a techno geek, which is terribly unfortunate because you could tack another zero to my salary if I were. But I'm learning, I'm dealing, I'm taking the occasional class here at the university in northern Colorado to learn some of the things that will help me do what I want to do. So, okay, they tell us Audacity, and that's a program I've known about for years and tried to work with and couldn't really get the hang of it. Well, of course, there's always glitches somewhere when I'm trying to do something. So if I'm trying to take a file that's an audio file and pull it into Audacity, I can't because it's the wrong format. So it first has to go through iTunes, and then iTunes has to convert it to an MP3, and then I've got to save it on my hard drive, and then I can pull it into Audacity. I can't deal. Except I am dealing. I'm learning. It's kind of fun. And I'm hoping that the end result will be worth the effort for me and for you to keep enjoying the show. Now, what is Dave's Gone By? Here I am 4 minutes in, and I haven't even explained what the program is to those of you who are coming to it brand new and fresh and virginal. Dave's Gone By is a mix of comedy and talk radio and music and interviews and skits and things like that. Been doing it, as I said, since 2002. This is our 325th episode, and this one has a pretty cool mix because we're going to do a couple of things. First of all, first and foremost, we have a special guest, singer-songwriter Lucy Kaplansky, one of those people whose name comes up again and again on folk-slash-pop Americana radio with people like Richard Schindel or Sean Colvin, with whom she kind of got her start, singing together and doing harmonies. And I think Colvin even tried producing Lucy's first album. Plus, she's a real dyed-in-the-wool kind of New York person, and she was appearing in New York a couple of weeks ago. Well, sorry, we missed that. But she will be back on Long Island in April. Let's see, on April 24th, Lucy Kaplansky will be appearing at Port Washington's Jean Rimsky Theater. So this is ample time to go grab those tickets. Usually we kind of get the artist in there the week or maybe the week before they're appearing, just to coincide with things. Now you have a whole month with which to get your money together, get to the Jean Rimsky box office or give them a call, and get tickets for Lucy Kaplansky on April 24th. So we will be talking with her and hearing her music, but that is not all that we are doing on this day that's gone by. Well, no. First of all, we'll be bringing back our usual segment, Inside Broadway, where we go inside Broadway and talk about theater news and gossip and items of interest and the occasional theater review. I'm going to talk a little bit about the revival of A Little Night Music that they are doing on Broadway now with Angela Lansbury and Catherine Zeta-Jones. A Little Night Music, which opened just a couple of months ago, and really, it got mixed reviews up and down the boards. I'll weigh in on that myself. Well, and isn't that enough then? You've got Lucy Kaplansky. You've got talk about Broadway and the arts. What else could we possibly be doing on this episode of Dave's Gone By? I'm so glad you asked. Ladies and gentlemen, it is St. Patrick's Day, and a happy one to you. And although I'm not Irish, I will always be somewhat Irish in spirit, mainly because my dad used to love to play the Clancy Brothers, so that was basically our window into Irish culture. So, in honor of this being St. Paddy's Day, gotta do a bit of Irish music. Granted, Lucy Kaplansky is about as Irish as I am, but we have a couple of special songs, including The Return, one of the classic numbers of this radio program, Seamus the Urine Man. Yes, Seamus is back. How could we have a St. Patrick's Day on this show after all these 7 years and not play Seamus the Urine Man? If you want to find out the whole story behind that, go back in the archives of Dave's Gone By and look for the song. And at one point I told this whole story of when my wife and I visited Ireland and we were going to these little stores and these candy stores. And we came to one rather special little nook that had gum and soda and little cakes and pastries. But it was really... I can't tell the whole story now. So just go back to the archives. This is a good time for me to tell you that the archives of Dave's Gone By are at davesgoneby.com. And all you got to do to find them is just find the archive section, and they are almost all there. Almost every episode we have ever done of this program is there, absolutely free. You can either download it to your iPod or play it as a podcast or an audio stream right on your computer. You don't have to do anything else, don't have to pay a cent, and also you can scroll back and forth to skip the boring parts or go over the good parts again and again. davesgoneby.com, and it's also a place to find out about the history of this show, to see some pictures, and to find out more about the whole program. And the best part, the best part of this show is going to be talking to Lucy Kaplansky, of course, but we have a brand new song. Been a while since I've been able to say that. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to debut on this episode of Dave's Gone By, especially for St. Patrick's Day, a new song called Drink Till I'm Drunk. And the best part is, I was able to record this on a digital recorder, so for once, the piano should actually sound like a piano and not some thumping little tin can thing, but should sound like a piano. Ran it through iTunes, ran it through Audacity, came back here, hopefully, it will still sound like music by the time we're done. Although, since it's a song that I'm playing and singing on, it might not be quite good music, but I'm still proud of it. And I'm proud to be doing Dave's Gone By, and extra proud that we are still sponsored by some wonderful organizations like Performing Arts Insider, Theater Journal, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. PerformingArtsInsider.com is the place to go for more information about that. Also brought to you by TotalTheater.com. This is a website where you can see reviews and articles about the theater from all over the world. Broadway, off-Broadway, from Italy to Romania. Go to TotalTheater.com. And just click around. It's absolutely free, and you can just see hundreds and hundreds of really interesting theater reviews, new and old. This program is also brought to you by Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway, and they offer 10% off to every Dave's Gone By listener, no matter what your job. If you have one little copy and it costs 10 cents, they'll give you a penny back because you get 10% off. Or if you have a big, big job and it's not just copies, it's printing and binding and making calendars and ordering wedding invitations, all jobs, no job too big or small, Hewlett Minuteman Press, they are the kings. Give them a call at 516-569-5577. Area code 516-569-5577. And finally, this program is brought to you by Jeff and his company, Fancy Schmancy Balloons, for all your party decorating needs. Give them a call. You know, we're going to come up on graduation time. It's not that far away. I mean, a little late for your St. Patrick's Day party, perhaps, but it isn't just balloons. It's the way to make your party look really amazing. 516-797-3229 is his number. Area code 516-797-3229. Well, happy, happy Wearing of the Green Day. And I guess every other radio host should be green with envy that we have such a cool show for you. And we will begin right after this with Inside Broadway.
Okay, listen to me. No, I mean listen to me on compact disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like Mel's a Poppin' and Handyman Yoni, visits with guests like Reckless Eric and Julie Haggerty, punchlines and politics in the News Gone By, all just $11 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.org for me on CD. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TotalTheater.com.
Yes, we go inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By here on the St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2010. And so much Broadway news to tell you about, because as I said at the top of the show, this is the busy time for New York theater. This is when producers are scrambling to open every show they can in time for the Tonys. So, for example, you've got the Green Day show American Idiot starting previews next week. Also, Sondheim on Sondheim starts next week, too. That's kind of a review show with Vanessa Williams and Barbara Cook, and also probably, as I've heard, on film, Stephen Sondheim talking about his process and writing the songs that you hear Vanessa Williams and Barbara Cook singing. So it should be real interesting. And also some good news on Broadway that the revival of Arthur Miller's A View from the Bridge just recouped its money. That is a fairly and surprisingly rare thing to do on Broadway. Shows are very, very expensive. If you have, if you have a big, expensive musical, then they have to run a long time and get a very big house and charge very high prices for tickets in order to recoup their money, if they're lucky, in 9 months to a year or so. If it's a small show, if it's a play, they're going to try and get their money as fast as possible, because plays don't necessarily run nearly as long, and they tend not to charge quite as high prices as musicals can. But A View from the Bridge stars Liev Schreiber and Scarlett Johansson, so there's so much star power there, and they got terrific reviews. So that was a hit coming right out of the box, and it just took a few weeks, and they made all their money back. They're in the black, and now the rest is gravy. Well, kind of an Italian longshoreman kind of gravy, if you're talking about A View from the Bridge. Now, as far as really immediate Broadway news, it's Michael and Edna. That's right, a very odd combination indeed. Michael Feinstein and Dame Edna Everage opening in a Broadway show together tomorrow, March 18th. And boy, the news on this, I was so ticked off when news started coming about this months ago. Because first, it was Michael Feinstein doing a solo show. I'm not sure if it's Feinstein or Feinstein. We'll split the difference. We'll call him Feinstone. So he was supposed to do a show. And then news came that Dame Edna was going to do her own, his own, its own Broadway show as well. Except, no problem, right? But they were both going to be called All About Me or It's All About Me, basically the same title. So that was out there in those things. And then there was this feud, which may have been real or may have been completely manufactured, which kind of ticks me off. Suddenly, one person was saying that they had the title first. The other person was saying, no, it's my title, and why are you taking it, and blah, blah, blah. Somehow, along the way, they combined forces, and so it's going to be a mix, of music from Michael Feinstein and comedy, of course, from Dame Edna Everage. Okay, we shall see. It feels rather Frankensteinian, but they do have Christopher Durang, the really wild playwright, writing some of their comic shtick, so that might help as well. And coming up on March 25th, another show, Twyla Tharp, back on her feet, or back in her toe shoes, as it were, the modern dancer, she's doing the show Come Fly Away. That'll be opening. And it's a show that involves Sinatra songs. Now, you know Twyla Tharp from doing Moving Out, the really very, very popular Billy Joel show, huge hit, and the huge flop she had about three seasons ago with Bob Dylan songs called Times They Are A-Changin'. So here, well, she's one up and one down. She's batting 500. Will she knock it out of the park with a show completely danced to Sinatra material? My bets are she's going to do a lot better with this than the Dylan material. I just get that feeling. So, we shall see. It opens on March 25th. Well, moving off and even off Broadway, Worcester Group is back. Now, that's pretty exciting. Worcester Group is this very inventive, extremely unique theater troupe. It's hard to describe what they do. Very often, they will deconstruct a text or a play that is pretty familiar, but do it in a way that is absolutely unique to them and still very often fascinating and exciting and thrilling. And sometimes they also get some pretty big stars to be part of their firmament, even especially being such an experimental troupe. Well, they're bringing back a show from a few years ago called North Atlantic, and it's opening next week on March 23rd. And check out the cast on this, among others: Frances McDormand, you know her from Fargo. Maura Tierney, she was on ER all those years. And it's great to see her, by the way, because I believe she had breast cancer and was grappling with that for the past year. So it's going to be wonderful that she's back out there and starting on stage, not just running back to movies and TV. And also, longtime Worcester Group person Kate Valk. And the whole thing, it's going to be North Atlantic at the Baryshnikov Center in Midtown. So I urge you, if you've never seen Worcester Group and have no idea who they are, this is a great chance to see them right in Manhattan. They're not doing the stuff in Brooklyn, and they're not, you know, downtown in their usual performing garage area. Check them out. Also, got some happy, a lot of happy Broadway news this week. That's great. We've got West Side Story celebrating its birthday. It opened on March 19th, 2009. Feels like it's been going a bit longer, doesn't it? Feels like it's been around for at least two seasons. But no, it's just 1 year old. Happy birthday to it. I don't think it's the perfect West Side Story revival. I think it's done a little bit visually on the cheap, and I don't necessarily know if the supporting cast is quite up to the material. I mean, you've got to act and sing and dance all at the same time, and it can be... I mean, there are zillions of kids out there who can do that, but I don't know if director Arthur Lawrence really went the whole extra mile to get the kids who could do that. But still, it's West Side Story, for gosh sakes, and they still got the lead actress, Josefina Scaglione. I believe she's Argentinian, and she's just marvelous. She's beautiful, she can sing, she is just a great Maria. So check it out. Oh, and the English is back. Remember that whole controversy about West Side Story? Where Arthur Lawrence wanted it to be more, quote-unquote, authentic. So he took some of the lyrics and a couple of the songs, and he turned them to Spanish. Because he figured the Spanish people would be saying Spanish to each other. Which, it was not really more authentic at all, because then why wasn't all the dialogue in Spanish for the Spanish characters, not obviously the Irish ones. So, and people just, you know, who loved West Side Story and who know the score backwards and forwards and upside down were disappointed when they hear a tune that they knew and suddenly the words were coming at them in Spanish. It was missing something. And, you know, he's a stubborn old goat. And when I say old, I'm talking this man is in his 90s. But Arthur Lawrence listened not so much to the reviews, but to the audience feedback. And a couple of weeks in, he said, you know what? We'll mostly go back to the English. And people have responded pretty well. So that's West Side Story. Happy birthday to that. Happy birthday also to God of Carnage, the Yasmina Reza comedy, which opened on March 22nd, again, just last year. That cast is all new now. It's got Jimmy Smits. Jeff Daniels is back in it. He started in the show, but he's playing a different character, which is kind of interesting. Janet McTeer, the English actress, and Dylan Baker are the quartet of God of Carnage, which, I don't know, I still think it's one of the more overrated plays of recent times, but it's so nice to have a play be such a hit and such, in some ways, a cause célèbre that we'll give it a pass. It's like, okay, the first hour is pretty funny and pretty cute, and then the second half hour I could kind of live without. It goes on too long. But hey, it's a good time at the theater. People seem to love it. So happy birthday to God of Carnage, which is thinking very seriously of sticking around through the summer. Well, yeah, must go for the whole summer and to come back with an all-black cast in the fall. That will be interesting, too. Well, the last piece of kind of happy Broadway news is that Mel Brooks is climbing back into the saddle. Believe it or not, he's 83 years old. He is far from done yet. Now, he's kind of like Twyla Tharp, whom we spoke about two or three minutes ago. He had that huge hit, The Producers, one of the biggest mountainous successes in Broadway musical history, certainly of recent times. And then he came back with Young Frankenstein, which was not the flop that the Twyla Tharp Bob Dylan show was. In fact, a lot of people really liked Young Frankenstein, but the reviews were kind of, eh, and he just did not hit magic twice. Came close in some respects, but it didn't happen. But came away, and instead of being sort of gracious about it and licking his wounds and saying, okay, whatever, it didn't happen, and I guess I have some stuff to learn even at my age, he fought back, and he kind of, you know, made wee-wee on some of the critics and didn't really admit what we all sort of knew. But time passes, and now Mel Brooks is taking another crack, or will be taking another crack at Broadway. What's he going to do? Okay, you got it. Of course, Blazing Saddles. And I think that's not a bad idea. I think that would be more adaptable to a Broadway comedy musical than perhaps Young Frankenstein was. He's working on it at this point by himself. He's writing some songs for it. He hasn't yet brought in Thomas Meehan, who co-wrote Producers and Young Frankenstein. I don't know if he will or he won't. It's fairly early in the writing process, but Brooks says within a year he hopes to have it finished, and who knows, maybe by 2012, 2013, Broadway will see some Blazing Saddles. Brooks is saying that he's not bringing it to Broadway directly. He's not making that mistake. He's going to try that puppy out, so in case he gets swatted again. But good for him for climbing back on the horse and bringing it to Midtown, to Broadway, hopefully in the year or two ahead. Anyway, speaking of Broadway and speaking of comedy and musicals, I want to tell you about A Little Night Music, which I saw just a couple of weeks ago, and I shall do that on Inside Broadway right after this message.
There is a season, turn, 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 turn the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, because this is the season for Broadway. All the big shows are opening in the next few weeks. Learn about them all. For 64 years, Performing Arts Insider has been the Bible of Broadway. Find out why by going to PerformingArtsInsider.com. Subscriptions are 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. So turn, turn, turn to Performing Arts Insider for every show under heaven.
Welcome back to Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By. I wanted to tell you about a couple of shows that I've seen. The first one being the Broadway revival of the Stephen Sondheim musical A Little Night Music, which is based on one of the great Ingmar Bergman films called Smiles of a Summer Night. It's the rare comedy from Ingmar Bergman, and it just proved how he could do absolutely everything. I remember seeing the movie years ago, when I was pretty much still a kid, and not being all that into it, and just, you know, kind of watching it, being a little bored. But then I rented it last year, just to give another look at it, because Bergman had died fairly recently, and I wanted to go over his films and really see how he stood the test of time, which he really, really has. And that movie just knocked me out. Smiles of a Summer Night. It's beautifully composed. It is hilariously funny. It is so smart and so sharp and so wry. And you never believe this is the same director who did something as weird as Persona and something as incredibly dark and beautiful as The Seventh Seal. But anyway, this is not about the Bergman film. This is about Smiles of a Summer Night being turned into A Little Night Music. And in this revival, I've never seen the original. This is the first production I've ever seen of it. And it took me a while to get into. A lot of people, a lot of critics were thrown by the first part of the show, and I can understand why. The set is not much to look at. It's very spare. A lot of people complain that it takes place in half darkness, which is not remotely true. The first 10 minutes are a little dimly lit. There's a reason for that. The director is preparing you. He knows what he's doing. That is what sometimes I don't get about the criticism of shows sometimes. Not giving the director his or her due for starting something and maybe throwing you for a loop a little bit, or saying, oh, I didn't expect this, or it's not done like that. It wasn't done like this in 1970-something. And then not realizing that the director has this overall idea, this concept that he's following through on. And if you take it as a whole, it really does start to work. And that's exactly what happens with this A Little Night Music. I was kind of standoffish on it and, you know, watching it, not terribly even taken by the music, because I think the songs from the first part of the show are a little spiky. They're all waltzes throughout, pretty much. But, they're okay. They don't really, as the old canard about Sondheim goes, they're not quite hummable. Later on, they certainly get to be. And that's the thing. Everything starts to build. It's this wonderful comedy of all these goings-on, of love triangles, and not just the thing of, well, so-and-so loves one person, but they love another, and that Schnitzler-Laurent sort of thing. But also people, that wonderful undertow of people who really should be in love, but time and circumstance and forces mitigated against that. And is there one more chance for two people who really should have been together on some level to get together? And the beauty of Sondheim and his ambivalence, and also the book writer for the show, I believe it's Hugh Wheeler, is also saying, well, yes, they belong together, but maybe had they gotten together back then, it wouldn't have worked anyway. So maybe now is the time. Or maybe even now is not the time. So there's this wonderful undercurrent of sadness that runs through what is essentially a bedroom farce of sorts. And you really feel it in the second act, and especially, yes, this is the show from whence we get Send in the Clowns. And we know it from the Judy Collins version, which is magnificent, and Frank Sinatra, and Everyone Under the Sun. How great to see the song in context. That it's really written, that the lyrics are not just generic love song lyrics. They absolutely relate to Desiree Armfeldt, this actress who could have loved and stayed with this man, but it wasn't the right time for her, it wasn't the right time for him. Now he's married to a young bride, she wants him back, but will it happen? And when it almost is about to happen and then falls through again, that's when she sings Send in the Clowns. And it's really touching. And I will give Catherine Zeta-Jones, who plays Desiree Armfeldt, absolute due credit. She is terrific. Wasn't necessarily expecting that, even though she blew us all the way in the movie of Chicago. Who knew she could be so beautiful and do all the rest? Well, you see it here again. She has magnificent presence. She's funny when she needs to be funny. She's regal. She's perhaps not the most... she's certainly dynamic. I mean, but if... No, I'm not going to say anything negative about her. She is terrific, and when she sings Send in the Clowns, she knocks it out of the house. And it's just extremely touching. And yes, I should mention that Angela Lansbury is in the cast as the old lady who kind of gives advice and watches all the goings-on from her palatial little country house and estate. And I'm so glad, I mean, every time now that we see Angela Lansbury on stage, we want to go, yay, Angela Lansbury! And sometimes we're forced to under not-so-great circumstances. She was in that Terrence McNally play Doubles, which was in no way worthy of her or her co-star Marion Seldes. And she was also in Blithe Spirit last year on Broadway, a revival of a Noel Coward play, and I think she won the Tony for it. And she was fun to watch, but she was camping it up. And people loved it. She was on a little bicycle, and she was sweet and funny and dancing around. And, okay, I just felt like she was pushing it. Like they were giving it to her because, oh, it's Angela Lansbury being cutesy. Here, she's really back in a character, and it's marvelous to see her. And there's also some other really fine performances. I want to give kudos to Alexander Hansen. He plays Frederick, the guy who could have, would have, and might be Desiree's lover. And just a terrific performance. Also like Leanne Larkin, and I never thought I'd say this because I hated her in Gypsy. She played the younger sister, or excuse me, the older sister in Gypsy, the one who was initially being primed to be the big vaudeville star. And I always thought she was playing it really kind of snarky and seemed way too old for the part, and she was kind of playing the subtext rather than the text too much. And even though that was a marvelous, remarkable revival of Gypsy, that was one little off-note that I had. Well, here, go figure, she plays Petra the Maid. And it's this very light and larky, little pun on the word lark in there, and playful and very sexy role. And she's terrific. So great to see her bouncing back, at least in a different way, in A Little Night Music. So, am I recommending it? Of course. And it's also a show for people who don't think that Sondheim does musical comedies anymore. I mean, yes, he did Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, brilliant, hysterical, and he's done comedy here and there. There's comedy in Company, too. But, you know, go see Little Night Music. Take 3 hours of your life and watch a piece of art. It's not perfect. It sometimes drags a little bit, but it is ultimately spellbinding. So give kudos to the folks who brought that back to Broadway. Actually, I think it's the first revival of the show since it was on Broadway in the 1970s. Wanted to give just another quick mention to a couple of shows that I saw. First of all, you know, I'm living in northern Colorado now, so I don't get to see as much New York theater, but I get to see a little bit of theater up here, and was happy to see the touring company of The Drowsy Chaperone. That was the Broadway musical Tony winner from a couple of seasons back. Is it up to the Tony standards? No, the set was not the same, and anything without Sutton Foster that used to have Sutton Foster, you kind of miss Sutton Foster. But I was very pleasantly surprised by the job that they did. It was just a one-play stand. They came in on a Sunday afternoon at the Union Colony Civic Center in Greeley, and although, yes, this being a tour, all the music was pre-recorded and blah, 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 still, very entertaining show. Very funny, very engaging. Couple of performances, a little too loud, a little too big. And I think that the lead actor, the guy who plays the man in the chair, if you know the show, he's this fella who tells the audience, okay, I'm a little down, I'm a little blue today. So how do I get out of my funk? I play an old cast album from a musical from the 1920s. And it pulls me out of my funk because I start envisioning all the scenes and the songs and the glitter and the glamour of that show. And that's exactly what he does. It's a made-up show by the people who created The Drowsy Chaperone. But as he's sitting in his shabby little apartment, suddenly the characters come through his refrigerator, they come bursting through the front door, and there's comedy and zaniness and singing and dancing and fun. So, wow, lots of theater in New York, out of New York, all the way around the country. Here, Inside Broadway.
We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Minuteman, the superheroes of photocopying, printing and binding. Minuteman, no job too big or small. Minuteman, family run since 1975. Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island, next to the new Lowman's Shoe Store. Tell them they've sent you for 10% off. Minuteman, hero of our photocopying dreams.
Hi, this is Lucy Kaplansky, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on davesgoneby.com.
Run for
to Dave's Gone By, and one of the things that I love to do on this program is greet musicians that work in the idiom that I kind of appreciate most, that folk, but also pop and rock, and a little bit of country too. And I thought, well, here's someone who does wonderful work, and it, although it's quite well known, is perhaps a little underknown and underappreciated. So we wanted to shine a light on Lucy Kaplansky, who is with us in the neighborhood all the way from New York. How are you doing, Lucy?
Great, thanks. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. And also nice to be listening to your records, although there's nothing quite immediately new. Are you working on a new disc, or...?
Let's put it this way. I'm working on songs for a new disc. I'm not sure when I'm actually going to make the new disc. And then there's something else that I'm not at liberty to talk about. but I will be. There's a new project I'm working on that's a collaboration, and probably in a month or two we will be talking about it. But so there's a couple of things that are coming soon.
Sure. I wanted to ask about the whole collaboration thing, because you do more of those than most people. I mean, you're almost as known for that as you are for your own work. So people like Bill Larcy and obviously Sean Colvin and Cliff Eberhardt. Do you think, first of all, there's any particular reason why you're often the go-to girl for backup?
First of all, I love singing harmony. It's one of my favorite things to do. And I guess I'm good at it.
Okay.
The main reason is I tend to try to do sort of unexpected, interesting stuff when I sing harmony, and people seem to like that.
Is that maybe the secret of what makes a good harmonizer or singing partner? You throw in a little something extra along with what's expected?
Well, that's what I like when I hear harmony. I mean, Emmy Lou Harris is an incredible background singer, and she definitely does something you don't expect, like, almost every time. I think that's probably true.
Well, I mean, Emmy Lou Harris had, for the most famous thing that I would know her for, is singing backup with someone who barely gave her a chance to practice, which was on Dylan's Desire album. And I think they barely rehearsed. He just said, all right, the song sounds like this, and then threw her to the mic and recorded it.
Right.
Never gave her a chance to do a second take. It didn't matter. You know, she did great.
She did great.
But I assume you get a little more opportunity to work.
Not always. Surprise. Someone who shall remain nameless had me sing with her at Carnegie Hall. This is many years ago. And not only didn't rehearse, but had me sing on a song I had never heard before.
Oh, come on.
I'm not kidding. So you never know. And you just have to be really quick. And I am quick.
Okay, now why is that person nameless? Who?
Well, because I don't want to offend anyone.
Well, it's not offend. You're just...
And it wasn't a big deal that somebody might take it that way.
Oh, okay.
And I was thrilled to do it, believe me.
Well, sure. I mean, was it a last-minute choice to do that song?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay. So let's also roll it back a little bit to the beginnings of what you were doing. And you were kind of part of that folk music boom that gave us people like Suzanne Vega and Tracy Chapman and, you know, Bill Morrissey and stuff. I mean, did you feel part of a community when that was going on?
Yeah, there really was a community. We're talking about the late 70s, early 80s. There was this hub, which was this place in the Village, Folk City, and it really was a community. I think part of what had happened was there was a huge article in the New York Times in 1977, I believe, about the folk revival in Greenwich Village, and that just kind of brought so many people there, to, you know, aspiring singer-songwriters, and there was an incredible amount of talent. We all just kind of hung out there. I mean, I actually worked there. I was a bartender and a waitress, and I sang there, obviously, but we all just kind of hung out there night after night. I don't know of any other sort of scene like that. I feel like that hasn't been replicated. It lasted until Folk City was sold in the mid-80s, and it was really extraordinary.
It didn't move to the bottom line on some...
No, not really, because you had to pay to get to the bottom line. But see, the thing was, with Folk City, there was open mic night, there were a couple different nights where you didn't have to pay a thing, and if they knew you, you didn't have to pay. So anyone could kind of come in there and just hang out at the bar, you know, sort of night after night, and not have to pay. So I think that was the big difference.
So that also must have been, on some level, a musical education for you.
Well, for sure. I mean, some of the most talented people I've ever encountered were in that scene. I mean, Suzanne Vega, probably number one. I met her. Actually, we were both students at Barnard College. It's a long story, but someone put us on a bill together up at Barnard, and that's how I met her. That was 1980. And I remember that thinking that night, my God, she's fantastic. And I was right. I mean, she really was. So it really was an extraordinary amount of talent in one place.
And can you think of anything that you particularly learned from watching someone up on that stage night after night? Were there any techniques, any things for crowd control, any picking techniques for guitar, anything?
That's a tough question because probably a lot of it I took in unconsciously. I would certainly say that listening to Suzanne, you know, back before anyone had heard of her,
right.
I think I really tried to write as well as she did. I mean, I remember one time I played her a song. This is, again, I think 1980 or 81, and she had compliments for this one part of the song, and I really took that seriously because I thought she was so good. You know, I think I probably really learned something about how a song should be put together from listening to her.
Cool. So you were part of the scene and making a name for yourself, and then at some point, for some reason, I guess it may have been in the 1980s, you gave it up.
Right. It's a really long story. I'm going to make it really brief, which
okay.
is that I was too conflicted and sort of neurotically conflicted to let myself have this thing that I really wanted, and I had to run away from it. And I ended up becoming a psychologist, ironically. And then after I'd gotten my doctorate, I started seeing a really good therapist and realized pretty quickly, because he was good, that I was giving up the thing I really wanted, and I came back to music.
Did you feel
so? I was a psychologist for a few years. I'm not. I don't work as a psychologist anymore. It's been a number of years, but I definitely learned something in that whole process.
I mean, did you feel that you did not deserve success for some reason?
No, it's way more complicated in your eyes than that. I mean, no, I think. Oh God, it really, it's like it is too complicated, but. I think I was afraid I wasn't good enough, and I didn't want to ever find out. That's certainly one thing. And for sort of larger reasons, I just couldn't let myself have what I wanted. And that's probably the bigger issue.
So when you gave it up for the first few years, and you were doing, when you were like in a mental, you weren't in a mental institution, you were helping, what, prisoners or something like that?
No, I worked in at St. Luke's Hospital with drug abusing mentally ill patients, and then I also worked with sort of more kind of standard neurotic patients in a private practice. But yeah, I did have a hospital job with some really, really ill patients.
Actually, that comprises the audience for this program, so you're in pretty good pretty good stead here. But did you, at that point, when you plunged headlong into that other job, did you still miss this, or did it take a couple of years to then realize, hey, you know, I miss singing and songwriting for people?
You know, I knew somewhere inside me that I missed it. I was very unhappy, and I didn't know why. I mean, part of how this all became such a mess for me was that I wouldn't let myself see that I missed it. But I remember, for instance, watching Sean Colvin win her Grammys, and she's someone I had sung with and been friendly with, and I was supposedly, you know, happy with my life becoming a psychologist, and I was just devastated. watching her get all of that, and I didn't know why. I was so devastated. So he took, like I said, a good therapist to help me figure that one out.
And so when you went back into music, were you fearful? Were you saying, oh my God, maybe, you know, I've been away from it so long. Either I've lost it or lost the ability to get a crowd back, or the music scene has changed again, or was it like, no, this is, you know, I know I can do this. I'm in a mental place that's ready for it, and I've got new songs, and boy, I'm excited about this.
Well, I can tell you I didn't have any songs.
Oh, okay.
I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. I really thought, I have no idea if I can do this. I have no idea if I'm good enough. You know, I was able to have the fantasy, having quit, oh, that if I had done it, I was good enough. But now it was like, okay, put the pedal to the metal. Let's see if you really have any talent. So I was absolutely terrified, probably didn't sleep very well for a couple years. But it, you know, fairly quickly started to become clear to me that I had some talent and I could probably pull this off. I didn't know how much I could pull it off, but...
And you found a supportive label, which so many people, you know, they're on a label that pushes them for one or two records, and then they may not, the sales may not be up to label expectations, and then they're
right.
Dumped. But even now, when the whole music industry is in flux, you've got a pretty supportive, cool label.
Yeah, that was just a stroke of luck, really, that Red House... I made this album, actually, while I was in grad school, and Sean Colvin produced it. She wanted to produce an album by somebody. So we made this album, and Red House Records wanted to put it out, and it was just luck, because I could have ended up with some other label, and nothing would have ever happened for me. And, you know, maybe we make our own luck, I don't know, but that was definitely luck, and they stuck by me and supported me and really believed in me, and they gave me a career.
And also, you're, on some level, keeping certain bits of what you do in the family. I mean, from doing a little research on you, you sing songs both by your dad and by your husband?
Well, my husband and I write these songs together.
Right.
I never wrote any songs with my dad, but yes, I do perform songs. They're very quirky, very funny songs. He was a really talented piano player. But the songs that I do that are my own are all, to one extent or another, co-written with my husband, Rick Lipman.
Does he do more of the lyrics or the music, or is it a real...
He's definitely, he's not a musician, and he is a great writer. So he has his hand in the lyrics. Sometimes, you know, they're his lyrics, and sometimes they're more a collaboration. But that's his thing.
How did you meet him?
He was a fan of mine.
Ha!
I met him at Coke City one night in 1985. And long story not worth telling, but...
Sure.
I knew that he was a fan of mine, and I went and introduced myself to him, and that was it. We've been together since that night.
Oh, my God. So that's 25?
25.
That's a
Mazel right. Tov.
Yeah.
Yep.
And do you have youngins?
We have a daughter who's 7.
And does she like your music, or is she listening to Lady Gaga or something, or both?
No, I'm happy to say no Lady Gaga, no Hannah Montana. She does love my music, but lately it's been usurped by the Beatles, who she's now obsessed with, and
well, that's
nothing
fair.
Could be better than that.
Yeah. What are you listening to these days?
Well, mostly the Beatles, because well, she'll let us play in the house. We try and put something else on. She says no, and she goes, puts on the Beatles. You know, all kinds of stuff, really. I'm a huge fan of Steve Earle's, and I always go back to his albums, and Wilco, and all kinds of stuff.
And I think you mentioned Richard Thompson in one of your interviews as well.
Oh, yeah, he's a hero of mine.
Well, so did you grow up listening to? Were you a Joni Baez, yeah. Collins person?
Yeah, that was the big one when I was 14.
So, Runway, we're talking with Lucy Kaplansky. Do you have another couple of minutes, or do you have to... Where are you up?
A couple of minutes, and then I got to get ready to go get my daughter soon, so...
Oh, no problem. By the way, is your husband still teaching at NYU? And I ask
yes.
That because it's my alma mater. What does he teach?
Film. He's in the film school, professor.
Oh, my God, how long has he been there?
Oh, a long time.
I went
on and off 20 years, more than that.
Oh, because I went to TSOA Film in 81 to 86, or four, so...
He was there starting around 85.
Oh my gosh, I was in the dramatic writing program at that point, so I just barely missed him. Oh, I'll probably cut that from the radio thing, but I wanted to get that in there. So, I'm curious also about one of your more recent albums, which was a cover album. A lot of people end up dipping into that well. They've done a couple of albums of original material, and then they feel like they want to do just cover tunes. What led you to Over the Hills?
Oh, that's not just cover tunes.
I'm sorry. I think those are the most prominent, though. But
oh, well, that's interesting. I think there are five originals on that album. Wow, no one's ever characterized that as a cover album to me.
I think I'll cut that from the interview, too. Okay, yeah.
I didn't have more than five songs. I had five songs that I thought were good enough to be on an album, and I wanted to put out an album, and I thought they were strong songs, so I thought about what else I could put on the album, and these were all, except for the Buddy Miller song, they were all songs I've been singing for years in one capacity or another, and just loved them all.
I really liked your version of Roxy Music's, or Brian Ferry, what's from Avalon, what's the...
More Than This.
That's just a lovely, lovely version of that. And I'm curious, since you are back in the business and doing what you do, that also means you've got to tour. You know, you've got to go around to different states and possibly countries. You have a 7-year-old girl. How does that fit in?
I just go on weekends. You know, when we became parents, I just kind of figured out that that's what I was going to do, and luckily I'd gotten far enough in my career that I could do that. So I go out on weekends and I come home, and my husband takes care of her on weekends, and I take care of her during the week.
That's brilliant.
Somehow sort of works out.
And about the way that music is now, I mean, I asked you about this CD and that disc, and what disc are you working on? Because I'm Luddite, you know, I grew up with record albums. And
right.
I even remember 8-track tapes, God help me. But, I mean, where are you as far as the whole new generation of iTunes and Rhapsody and download this and click that? I mean, is there a point where you're not even going to think in terms of shiny discs?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm still thinking in terms of discs because my audience still buys them. A lot of them at my shows. My demographic still buys CDs. That may change, and it may be that, EPs are going to be the thing of the future, or just downloads. And I think the next 5-10 years are going to really probably change everything. So for now, I'm still thinking in terms of albums, but I have no idea if that'll last.
And do you carry an iPod when you go in?
Oh, yeah, that's how I listen to music, yeah.
So what other people do you have on your iPod these days?
Oh, God, well...
Lady Gaga!
I should go look at it, because I'm blanking out. Lucinda Williams, Eliza Gilkison, my old friend, Bill Morrissey, John Gorka, my friend...
Nice. It's like you're walking around listening to WFUV without the DJs, pretty much.
Yeah, well, that's a great station, and yeah, I have very similar tastes, I think, as they do.
So, I want to thank you, by the way, Lucy, but I've got one more question that my parents would be mad at me if I didn't ask it.
Sure.
How Jewish are you?
Not observant.
Okay.
At really, almost at all. Just kind of evolved that way, and we celebrate Hanukkah, and that's
pretty
about it.
No, but you do Hanukkah, but not Passover.
Well, we do Passover when with my husband's family when we can get there, but they're not in New York, so we don't always get to do it. But yes, we would do Passover if we could get there.
Okay, that's now my parents will be happy. I asked
them.
And I'm very, very happy to have Lucy Kaplansky in the neighborhood. I want to wish you best of luck with all you're doing. So everybody, please, go catch Lucy Kaplansky. Go get her albums. They're really, really lovely.
Thank you.
And you have been lovely, too. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you. Nice talking to you, too. Thank you so much.
more than this. There is nothing more than this. Tell me one thing more than this. There is nothing. If they asked me, I could write a book. Well, they did ask me, and I did write a book. A collection of my comedies called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. If you like farce, there's The Triple Wedding. If you like dark comedy, there's Last Respects. If your taste runs to the absurd, Blind Date. Something for everyone in Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Through the Dave's Gone By website. When is Shalom Damagon? When is Shalom Damagon? That's all I ever hear. When is my TV show Shalom Damagon? Well, go to ShalomDammit.com for all the days, all the times, all the channels. It's all there. ShalomDammit.com. Now you know. Please go.
Well, kiss my Blarney Stones. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is March 17th. It is St. Patrick's Day here in the neighborhood and all over the world. And to celebrate that, of course, we're going to have music, including a brand new world premiere song debut on this show, Drink Till I'm Drunk. But you got to wait for it a little bit, because first we have to play a little bit of classic material from some older Daves, including the one, the only, Seamus the Urine Man.
Seamus the Urine Man, the Urine Man. There's a shop in Dublin town, you should stop and look around. You'll find candy, toys and smokes, and a gentle Irish bloke. Seamus the Urine Man, the Urine Man. Though he is a final soulless bladder he cannot control. So lift your nose and sniff the air. You'll smell something mighty queer. Seamus the urine man, the urine man. When old Seamus takes a whiz, he'll stand and whiz wherever he is. Seamus the urine man, the urine man. Seamus is a merry fellow, splashing in his pool of yellow. Never does he take a break. He'll make and make and make and make and make and make. Seamus the urine man, the urine man. He's guaranteed to amuse. Stand too close, he'll stroke your shoes. Seamus the urine man, the urine man. When old Seamus eats an egg, York starts running down his leg. He don't care for fame or money, long as he's all warm and runny. They call him Yellow Fellow, quite a stink. Seamus the urine man, the urine man. Best to back away a little, else you'll get a spray of piddle. He gets wetter than the navy, shouting out his bladder gravy. Seamus the urine man, every night he prays to Jesus to renew his enuresis. He lies down to rest his head, and wakes up in the waterbed. Seamus the urine man, the urine man. Seamus the urine man, the urine man.
I'm not Irish, but I wish I were, 'cause the Irish love their fun. When the Irish come to celebrate, they don't stop till the punching's done. So although I'm not an Irishman, I can hold my glass up high. I can drink just like an Irishman, and I will until I die. That is why I'm tight each and every night. Fill my glass and all will be right. When I drink, drink, drink till I'm drunk, then drink until I'm sick. Rugby and politics, pour me a shot. Mountbatten really deserved what he got. Grab me a Guinness, grab me a stout. I won't stop till it all vomits out. When I drink, drink, drink till I'm drunk, then drink until I'm sick. Watch me stumble out of the bar, onto the sidewalk and into my car. When I come swerving into your lane, hoist up a glass and we'll drink up again. When we drink, drink, drink till we're drunk, and drink until we're sick. Everyone dresses so festive and gay, wearing the green on St. Paddy's Day. Thanks to the whiskey and thanks to the booze, I'm wearing green from my mouth to my shoes. When I drink, drink, drink till I'm drunk, and drink until I'm sick. Drink till I stagger, drink till I fall, and cover the sidewalk with throat alcohol. Call me a loser, call me a jerk, still it beats taxes, marriage and work. When I drink, drink, drink till I'm drunk, and drink until I'm sick. Everyone, drink, drink, drink till you're drunk, and drink until you're sick. One more time, just drink.
Dave's Gone By wants you to advertise on the show. Reach our loyal audience with your message at prices you can afford even in this economy. Visit davesgoneby.org for info. You'll want us just as much as we want you.
Dave's Gone By.
Dave's Gone By.
There goes the neighborhood.
Well, welcome back to Dave's Gone By. So good to be back in the neighborhood, but it is time to say our farewells, at least for this episode, for this week. If you like the show or if you have any suggestions about it, please contact me at davesgoneby@aol.com. And remember, that's Dave, like my name, davesgoneby@aol.com. And please do visit our website, davesgoneby.com, to hear hundreds, literally hundreds, of archived episodes of the program absolutely free. You can download them as podcasts or listen to them right straight streaming on your computer. Is that like Slim Slow Slider? Right straight streaming? Have to check into that. Remember, it's davesgoneby.com. Reminding you that this show would not exist and would not have existed all these years were it not for Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. 10% off for all Dave's Gone By listeners if you tell them Dave sent you. Hewlett Minuteman Press, they're at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island. Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway since 1944. If you're a Dave's Gone By listener, you can get a really special, cool subscription rate to Performing Arts Insider. So visit PerformingArtsInsider.com and DavesGoneBy.com to find out all about that. The program is also brought to you by TotalTheater.com with hundreds and hundreds of theater reviews and articles from around the country and around the world. We're also brought to you by Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Jeff Goodman, the proprietor there, he will make your party an event. 516-797-3229. 516-797-3229. Shouldn't your event be fancy schmancy? Well, a couple of other reminders. Rabbi Saul Solomon, the beloved Rebbe, is still watchable on YouTube. His program, Shalom Damn It, Rabbi Saul Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour, all 10 classic episodes. Just go to YouTube. They're in pieces, because couldn't upload them half an hour at a time, so they're in 5 to 8 or 10 minute bits. But all the episodes are there. You just have to click on them. They're free. Catch Rabbi Saul, you won't be disappointed, on YouTube. Just look for Shalom Damn It or Rabbi Saul. And reminding you to listen to Joyce Keller. She is the psychic host of America's longest-running live radio show for, quote, body, mind, and spirit. She's been on the air since 1987 on Long Island's WGBB, Wednesdays at 11 o'clock Eastern. And speaking of radio programs, one of the reasons I haven't been doing quite so many Dave's Gone Bys is that I've gotten involved in the University of Northern Colorado's own student radio station. And I do a music program there every Saturday morning. So tune in. It's really cool. It's a lot of eclectic stuff, but really mostly centered on the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s folk, rock, and pop. I mean, again, that Americana, that Lucy Kaplansky kind of stuff, but a little spikier stuff like the occasional Captain Beefheart or Husker Du also. Gotta check it out. If you're on the East Coast, it's Saturdays from 11 until 3, and you go to unco.edu/UNC Radio. I think I have a link, actually, on the homepage of davesgoneby.com. But if I don't, the link is unco.edu/UNC Radio. These shows, unfortunately, are not archived, however, so you gotta catch them live Saturday mornings. Well, just time for a couple of get-wells and condolences. Condolences to Louise Ann, a family member on my wife's side. She lost her mom last week, so we wish her better news in this year and, you know, health and faith in getting over this terrible thing that she needs to deal with. And let's see, thank yous, of course. Thank you so much to Lucy Kaplansky for being in the Daverhood. She will be in the Long Islanderhood April 24th at the Gene Rimsky Theater in Port Washington, and catch her albums on Red House Records. Really good stuff from Lucy Kaplansky, and we will, of course, go out with a little bit more of her music. I want to wish happy holidays to my in-laws, they're not actually Irish, but happy St. Patrick's Day to Mama and Papa Weil, and happy upcoming Passover to my parents, Mom and Dad Lefkowitz, whom I love very much as well. And great love and joy and support and everything good to my beloved wife, Joyce. And thank you to everyone for listening and still staying with this program, lo, these many years down the road. In upcoming weeks on Dave's Gone By, more cool guests, including Ben Hodges, who is the editor-in-chief of the Theater World Annual Books. They used to be put together by a guy named John Willis, and he finally said, okay, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore. He groomed Ben Hodges to take it over, and he's been doing a really splendid job. So if you're into theater, I know we do Inside Broadway every week, but that's going to be a really cool theater segment, talking to Ben Hodges, the editor of Theater World Annual. Well, it is time, alas, to leave the neighborhood, and look to the rainbow as we do, but I'll be back very soon with the 326th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night and joy be with you all, and gone by.
Grandfather came to Canada with the trade of a different time, a learned man of God. It just wasn't worth a dime. So he mended clothes for pennies while his children went to school, sang them to sleep at night, songs from the world he knew. Oh, he could sing. Nothing to leave behind.